You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
Hey, excuse me? Is this because of that thing? Should I go somewhere?
You should go home.
What the world?
We've never seen a flu like this before.
Needs the speed at which this virus kills.
Chaos.
I think this thing is really happening. You can see it out there.
I can't stay here.
Sweet love. It's not safe.
I stood, looking over the damage, trying to remember the sweetness of life on Earth. But there is no before, only now.
I was late. You were early.
In a drift in a stranger's galaxy for a long, long time.
I have found you 9 times before. Maybe 10. And I'll find you again. There is no rescue mission. We are safe.
What the?
Strange and awful time was the happiest of my life.
Welcome, everybody, to the Periodic Table of Awesome.
Hello. Oh, hello, 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 hello. Oh,
sorry.
No, you've...
Quinny, you're out. Quarantine, no, out.
Where's the tape?
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, who'd have thought that this show about a thing where everyone had to lock themselves inside for an extended period of time would come out and be with... Anyway, hi. How you going?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm very excited to be talking about Station 11.
So I just need to check. This is Station 11. It's not Station 2?
No, it's not Channel 2. It's not Channel 7. It's not iStation Zebra.
Is it related at all to the character of Station or Stations from the Bill and Ted's films?
No, and shut up. It's not their 11th child.
I just love looking at Jill's face and that kind of pain thing of like, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
Always with the weird jokes.
Well, it's either me or Dion going deep on some weird shit that we don't know. So that's sure. How we roll.
No, and I mean, okay, look, I'm really finally excited to talk about this. It's been out for quite a while, and I think it absolutely flew under or over everyone's radar. During this whole time, but I understand why some people haven't seen it, but I'm just trying to amplify it because I think that as a complete series, it is a beautiful mixture of art and story and fun stuff. And I'm just really excited for people to have watched it or at least tried to watch it because how many episodes did you get through?
Okay, so we're diving right into the shame pile right away.
You're getting shamed immediately. Immediate shame.
Excellent. Jill, was that a 5?
It was a 5.
I also am a 5.
Well,
halfway.
Fucking jazz hands.
And you know what? I watched those five episodes today.
I'm fucking jazz hands theatre kid all over this. I have done all 10, but we are missing a Peter today because she has actually more important things to do.
And she's working very, very hard.
Yeah, she's in a work hell hole at the moment, so she doesn't have any time to watch things. She just has time to
talk about things in a kind of random way.
Yeah.
So we send our love to her, and we know that she's working very, very hard. So
yeah.
It'd be lovely.
Oh, she'll definitely be back next week because Severance.
Oh,
will she?
Yes.
I think Severance is the lesser of the two shows that we're talking about starting with S this month. But
starting with S.
Right.
But I know that's a big call.
It is very large.
I am going to be upfront and say that when you guys said, oh, let's do Station 11, to me it sounded like some weird, like, space set sci-fi thing, and I'm just like, I got no interest. And I fully intended never to watch it up until last night when Pete's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do the show. And I'm like, oh, I can't leave the guys hanging. So I'd never seen a trailer.
No.
And like Missy pointed out, like, this trailer seems like it's for a different show. And even though I wasn't watching it, it sounded like it was a completely different show. And I had a little mild panic attack and I thought, wait, did I watch the wrong thing? But then I remember the promo image had Himesh Patel and I'm like, no, he's definitely in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember doing that at uni where at one point I was studying, like, because I had to study theatre, so I was studying plays. And I remember reading the entirety of The Glass Menagerie when I was meant to be watching or reading A Streetcar Named Desire.
And, oh, God.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, I have fucked this up completely.
Quinny!
Exactly.
That's
Stella,
almost...
what are these little glass things for?
Well, that'd be like going, okay, we're doing Lord of the Flies as a production. And you come up and you're like, wait, I read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. when do we get the armor?
Wait, I went to Lord of the Fries.
Yeah. I love it. Okay.
So Dion, yes. Tell us a little bit about how you found it, because we all found it because it was
told us
to. Exactly.
Okay. So look, Station 11 is a book, which I had no idea about. So I'm coming into it completely off that. And do you want to really know how I got about this? Two ways. One, it was first Felicity said, oh, hey, we should watch Station 11. And it went in one ear and out the other. But then I think I saw that it was Mackenzie Davis's project that she was doing after Dark. Wait, what was the Terminator one?
Dark Fate.
I think it was a project after that because I'm a bit of a Mackenzie Davis fan.
I'll stand Mac D
just because I think one of the first things I saw her in was Halt and Catch Fire, which is great.
When I started watching this, I'm like, where do I fucking know this girl from?
Where do I know that person from? She's Halt and Catch Fire. But I liked that. And I didn't actually know anything about it whatsoever, apart from the description, which was, it's a post-apocalyptic dystopian, thing. And the immediate word post-apocalyptic made me fall into complete narcolepsy.
Yeah.
Whereas I was just like,
when it's like a post- a post-pandemic post-apocalyptic, which I'm just like, fucking
post-pandemic
really?
Post-pandemic apocalypse, like coming out in 2021, December of 2021. So it was kind of starting film. I'm not sure exactly when they started making it.
It was interesting because the book came out in 2014, so not that old. Mm. And then there was a lot of rights battles over it.
Yeah.
It went through some ungodly number of different rights arguments before it finally came to actually fruition.
Yeah. And look,
what were the rights arguments about?
Who owned it, basically?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So 2015, a film adaptation was announced.
But it was written by someone. Was there intellectual property in the book?
Not sure. I think it was more just like who owned the rights to the film adaptation or whatever. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, look, it started filming in January of 2020. Like literally, it started talking about this as they were going into it.
So they jinxed it. Great, thanks.
Pretty much. I mean, you know, it got ordered in June of 2019, just before everything happened, and it started ramping up in casting and just as the pandemic started kicking off, and then everyone went into, you know, fucking pandemic. And then but that's just kind of the backstory to it. I have to admit, yeah, I saw this as a post-apocalyptic story set, you know, in America. And I was just like, fuck's sake, this is another Walking Dead piece of shit.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've got to be thankful of there being no zombies in this show.
Yeah. And I thought, are we going to get another Sweet Tooth? Are we going to get another, like, the massive Last of Us vibes for that first episode?
Yeah. This was the whole sort of, like, the thing that I really liked about it. I mean, it's called Station 11. It has this weird advertising / vibe of fantasy science fiction stuff that's going on in there. But it is magical realism in a show that I just found so honest and true that I connected really well with the whole story by the end of it, because I went into it not actually, I have to admit, I went in a bit of a bulldozer when it comes to television, and I was kind of going
like a wrecking ball.
Yeah, I didn't want to like it, and then in the end, like when I got to the last episode, I was like, that's just fucking beautiful and interesting, and provided such a different experience of a post-apocalypse in such a lovely way that I was just really enthralled by the whole thing, because it is a bit of a long haul and there is a lot in there. But also, I have to admit, it's kind of the most honest representation of how people would live through an apocalypse. Because this is not a thing about fighting against an apocalypse. This is a thing about people living through an apocalypse, told from the two perspectives, which is as it's happening and 10 years later, concurrently.
Yeah, or more.
20.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe even 20. I'm not actually sure. I don't, because like
the secondary timeline jumps around all over the place. Yeah.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah. And there's a primary part of it that is 20 years.
Let me tell you, it all ties its, and just no spoilers for you guys, because you haven't
seen it. Please.
I know the spoiler section is going to be real difficult to actually get through.
But it all ties itself up, and that is the most amazing thing. Like, I mean, you're halfway through, and I'm going, there is so much more to go through here, but also it ties itself up really beautifully. Anyway.
So, I mean, shall we give you the potted synopsis? I mean,
would you like a bit of, I've got a bit of music for you. Should have.
Well, I mean, is it done by a symphony?
It could be.
A one-drumming symphony?
Let me just see what I've got there. I've probably got something in there. No?
No, I don't know. If there is it.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
A post-apocalyptic saga spanning multiple timelines, this limited drama tells the stories of survivors of a devastating flu as they attempt to rebuild and imagine and reimagine the world anew while holding on to the best of what's been lost. There you go. That's the official HBO Max story.
Now it's just freeform jazz. Yeah! Ow! Just post-apocalypse with post-apocalyptic sound music, because they don't have anything else.
You know what this reminds me of? And this is from the 5 episodes I've watched. This reminds me of a companion piece to Utopia.
You mean the British television series Utopia, not the American remake Utopia?
Nor the Australian comedy Utopia.
Yes. Yeah, I was about to say, there's not a very lot of government involvement in that. Okay, that's a very Australian joke.
Oh, that Utopia. Yeah. I forgot that I watched that thing.
Which one? The British one?
Did you watch the American one or the Australian?
I did. No, I watched the American one.
Yeah.
I didn't finish the American one.
No, neither did I. Yeah.
And we won't talk. We don't talk about reality TV on this show, Pretty Kanga. Sorry, no.
No.
Reality TV show Utopia. No, we don't do that.
I thought we were going to do Byron Bay's next month.
No, Margaret Pomerantz has already reviewed Byron Bay's, and it is...
Nobody has anything else to add on that subject.
No.
Yeah. So, to me, I feel like Utopia, the British one specifically, has this particularly weird vibe. Like,
yeah.
And it's this thing that is just unsettling. Like, everything feels a little strange, and the characters don't feel like they're quite talking to each other. And it's a little heightened and a little theatrical and stuff. And that's kind of where I was going with this one after a few episodes. I was like, okay, this is, I don't quite get what's happening here, but it sits in a very strange place in the viewing part of your soul, whatever the fuck that means. But I really enjoyed it. And I think, Dee, you kind of sold me on it. Because if you'd said to me after the first episode, or, you know, even halfway through the first episode, are you going to keep watching? I'd be like,
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, I have to admit, because one of its strengths, I think one of the greatest strengths of it is it relentlessly tells its own stories. And the problem I think people have with it is that those stories are two separate things with a threaded narrative. Like, as you discover more about the two distinct stories, you start understanding where they overlap and why they actually are important to each other, which can be very jarring, because you get a little bit like, who's this? What's going on here? What's going on with those sorts of things? Why is this kind of boring? And it also shows a fair bit of the stuff that I think you're not used to, or you're not expecting from a post-apocalypse story, you know, like kind of the boring stuff. Like, we're looking for a lot of, you know, what are the terrible things? What are the big moments of it? And this is just, you know, kind of at the start, there's two stories. Okay, so maybe we should explain that one first.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So one story focuses on Himesh Patel as Jeevan Chowdhury, who has, through the first episode, end up becoming just taking care of a young girl who was in a play called Kirsten, played wonderfully by Matilda Lawler as Kirsten, a young child Kirsten, and she's an actor, and she's at a play, and then he ends up just through kind of moral obligation, just making sure she's safe when quite actually like basically a pandemic, like an epidemic, a pandemic, both, an epidemic pandemic breaks out at once, and a flu that's killing people. Like very rapidly starts spreading through major cities. And so he ends up taking care of her through like a moral obligation that he feels, even though he's fighting against it, and ends up going to his brother's house, bunkering themselves in there. Like, so he's got a reclusive brother, a sister who's a doctor who he never gets to see again. He just interacts with her over the phone. And a girl that he doesn't know, end up bunkering down for during this whole terrible situation, watching the world dissolve around them outside, until eventually has to leave. And then there's this other story, which is in the future, after like post pandemic has finished, and it's adult Kirsten, played by Mackenzie Davis, as she now moves around with basically a group of traveling playwrights, acting in the future.
And artists and musicians.
Artists and musicians, because the world did not recover. It did not recover like everyone kind of expected. It is still a terrifying, aggressive post-apocalyptic world with no one in it, where you know, all the things that you would expect, which are like gangs and violence and everything, but it's never quite confronting. It sort of seems always on the periphery. So there's these two very distinct stories, and they're both done so well. But as I said, I completely understand if people have trouble.
It's interesting you say two.
I say two.
And sorry, Quinny, my phrases. Internet has just
pedal faster, Quinny.
It was doing so fucking well.
It was. It was doing so.
It's interesting.
Nice.
Oh dear!
Yeah, he's having a terrible time.
The two stories. I would say that there's three.
Three stories.
Oh, okay.
Sure. And what would the third one?
In fact, I would probably say yes, that there is three as well. Because there's a character that we meet quite early on in the series that is a little bit mysterious, but you kind of put a connection together and then it starts following that person's story from the early days.
Maybe I'm simplifying to try to encourage people to join with the stories, like the two easy narratives to follow discover more. Because what I'm really doing here, I'm selling it past the first episode and I'm like, stick with it. And I do remember, Quinny, I sold it to you on the fact that it felt to me very much like A Play Called Mr. Burns, which I think I've talked about a few times. What if, people started reciting the Simpsons scenes to make each other happy around a campfire after an apocalypse, and then that ends up becoming the only entertainment in the world, and then it becomes the religion of the world. It's a very great play. It's got a lot to it.
And that's what you told me, and that's what sold me on it, because I was like, okay, right, I'm intrigued to know what aspect of this story could possibly be reflective of that. And then episode two certainly kind of leans in on that. But the first episode is so very much apocalypse, pandemic, planes crashing into buildings, people are dying everywhere. And I was like, fuck, this is heavy going. And I really wasn't seeing the narrative through line until episode two. And then it's interesting because you do episode two and it's got that lightness of touch and everything. And then episode three goes in a totally different direction again. And then episode four goes a different direction and episode five is a different direction. So it keeps shifting very, very massive swings in terms of what narrative you're following, but it all is obviously building to a big narrative. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't find it jarring because I'm used to seeing this kind of narrative used in so many things where you're doing flash forwards and backs and forward and back. I do have to say though, I'm really enjoying that, like this part of the future that we're seeing is just like the arts are thriving, man. And like, we've all just gone back to Shakespeare, like do what you know and do it well. Why not just travel the states of America performing Shakespeare for a living? Like,
and not even like, I love it. Not even the states of America. Like it's got a very set kind of area that it is in around Lake Michigan.
That little safe zone.
Just that little safe zone. And that kind of goes to reinforce this whole idea that there is a turbulent, troubled world out there full of danger and terrible things. And they've found a little, like, safe area they can exist with. Like, I love this. It's how could I sell it to people? It's like, what were the theater kids doing during the apocalypse? If all the jocks were killing the nerds and like did that, the theater kids all banded together and never stuck around long enough in the same place to get stabbed. But also, above doing a bit of stabbing themselves.
Yeah. I mean, we've got on stage battle training. We know how to fight.
Yes. And if it doesn't work, you go, huzzah, it's for a joke. Ha ha, come see our play. No,
in this post-apocalypse, the bards win.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's kind of how, like, I'm really being encouraging of people sourcing it out and going to watch it. And you can get it, like, either on HBO Max or on Stan. In Australia. I think it's still on Stan. I hope that.
Yes, and that's why I'm watching it today.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, get people to kind of join in with it because I feel like it didn't get enough love.
I was doing all that I could to avoid watching it. And then when I started, I'm like, oh, this is actually quite a nice show.
Yeah. And it's really
maybe not nice, but an interesting show.
Absolutely. Mm. And I think it's absolutely, like, the reason I think it works so well is because I am 100% invested in each of the leads in this. I'm 100% invested in both Kirstens. Mackenzie Davis is an adult Kirsten, or Matilda, Lawler is the young Kirsten. I'm invested in Jeevan Chowdhury's growth as a human.
I would be, apart from the fact that, like, he's big in episode one and then disappears for four episodes.
Does
and I'm like,
he
I know that he's going to come back because you don't hire that actor and not have him come back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I all I'm going to say is that if, like, cause I know you're only 5 episodes in and I don't want to spoil it for anyone who wants to go out there. No way will I go past discussing anything past that. I'm just going to say,
I don't know. I feel like we still, cause we've got people in the chat who have watched all the way through. They've done the homework.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, like, I can hear their effusive love. I want to hear the issues that they like, if they've got issues with certain things, not specific, just give me vibes. I just love that. There's, kind of, I got invested with every single one of the characters in it. It didn't matter who they were. I was just down for their stories because each of them is a great story. And it's really hard to do, like, this couldn't have worked as a movie. It's too much. It seems like it had the right amount of episodes. 10 hours is a lot, but it does feel like very much like they're talking about Shakespeare plays. It's kind of this very long, very convoluted thing where everyone has a really distinct and good payoff. And also the story is very tight by focusing not so much on the apocalypse world, but focusing on how the people are interacting with each other. So that's why I was just kind of like, you know, I was like, this is great. But also it's not what you're expecting. And even through to the end, I was still like going, that's not how I thought that would go. Okay. I thought that was going very different because if you're up to episode 5, which is when they go to the golf course, it gets real dark.
No, the golf course is the one before episode 5.
Yeah. But I mean, have they left the golf course yet?
No,
but episode 5 was the airport.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, the airport is fine, but like the episode where they have to leave the golf course for reasons is real dark.
Because the end of episode four
was a little bit like cliffhanger, and then they don't go back to it in the next episode.
Yeah. So, you know, like I know that there are those sorts of things, but I mean, isn't that so interesting that you can present some absolutely dark and terrifying concepts in ways where you're like, holy shit, I didn't expect that would happen.
Well, and I like the structure of it too, because what they're doing is giving, like, anytime they cut away from the main story, it's to give you key information that you need. So, you know, we start with where it all starts. Second episode is now telling you where we are at 20 years later. You're telling you what the symphony is, introducing to the main players and kind of giving you a clear idea of what their day-to-day normal life is, but then also setting up the importance of Station 11, like what this book is.
We kind of haven't addressed that yet.
That's
the title of this comes from a comic book within the show.
Which is, one of the things that made me kind of think of Utopia, because in the original, the British and the American one, like the concept was that there was this comic book that was, you know, filled with some kind of knowledge that people weren't meant to have or something like that. And I feel like this is kind of the same. And so in the second episode, you kind of get hints about what's going on, that the comic book is important. And then episode 3 is about the comic book. And then episode 4 is back to the main narrative. And it's like, okay, now we see, you know, what some of the dangers are and move things forward a little bit further. And, you know, you start to see the danger of the prophet. And then episode 5 is like, okay, now we're going to go back and explore some history again and tell you what you need to know about that character and stuff. And I'm like, it's very smart.
I got to admit, like, without giving too much, like, away on certain levels, I really enjoyed the fact that it focuses everyone's motivation in this, like in this post-apocalypse. It kind of does get to boil it down to this ideology or this idea that things are important if they're important to you and you can make them important. And everyone needs to understand that is, all it is, really. We're kind of like, I mean, all of these ideologies and things have sprung from ideas. And if people put those ideas out there and focus on them, that can sort of make a lot of things happen. I'm explaining myself badly. Let's go to this. The comic book.
I zoned out.
Yeah, I know.
I kind of knew what you were saying though, D.
I'm trying not to, like, I don't want to give anything away, but I do want to say the comic book's a really important piece, and it's very beautiful when they're talking about it as it goes through, but it's just a fucking metaphor. And watching the characters in the TV show work out that it's just a fucking metaphor is hilarious. Well, not hilarious, but really, like, kind of amazing, because they're going through this entire incredible journey based on something. And then you realize that when you look back, you're like, oh, everyone is just going through this same kind of journey, but with different things. Like, for some people, it's the comic book. For other characters in this show, it's other things.
And the traveling symphony.
Traveling Wilburys.
Do you think I can think of a single Traveling Wilbury song?
Isn't it great to see...
At the end of the line.
That's the one I was... Oh, fuck.
Isn't it great to see Old Tank Girl?
I love that Laurie Petty is still in the apocalypse.
Yeah, I love that. And like, I looked at that and I was like, that's Laurie Petty. And then I'm like, that's Laurie Petty running around with a group of people in the post-apocalypse. I'm like, she's still Tank Girl.
She just needs to have some sexy times with a giant kangaroo and everything's fine. Well. Played by Ice-T.
Fuck, I have not watched Tank Girl, but I know her from Orange is the New Black, and she was weird in that too.
Ah. See, our experience of my first experience of Laurie Petty was Tank Girl, where she is like, 20-something? And it is punk as fuck, and it's... And she is very funny in it. And now you see this and you're like, oh, what? Wow. So I've never seen Orange is the New Black. So,
yeah. Really? So,
yep.
God, another fucking thing to add to your list.
Wait a second. So it's just Tank Girl. What about Point Break, A League of Their Own? You know?
Yes, I've seen those.
Okay.
But you know, the first one that I remember her in is $2.15.
Okay, Jill, you've got to go watch Tank Girl.
Yeah, you really do.
No, another one. Another one. It's set in Outback Australia.
Yeah. Is it
anyway. Yeah. Well, I mean, where else do you get that?
That was
giant...
Australia, and I haven't watched that.
That's not even.
It's a fucking thing.
That's like, okay, the film Australia is not even set in Australia.
I mean, it is, but it's
not. No, the film Australia is set entirely in Baz Luhrmann's coke dream of what the Outback looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Australia is set around Baz's interpretation of what the Outback is when he's talking on the phone to some field producer who's out there going, yeah, that sounds good, while he's in Sydney in an apartment with a cold.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm paying attention to the chat, but also to the conversation. This idea that that came up in the chat, that nobody has a plan. Nobody has a goal.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because I don't think any of us do. Like, most of us have the goal of live until, you know, we stop doing that and try and make the most out of what we can. Nobody's I honestly think if you're presented with the apocalypse, are you going to try and rebuild society?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a point made by one of the characters in episode 5, the Irish guy. He was like, fuck the future. We just have to think about now. Like, we've just got to do what we're doing and like realize that we're in like a really good position right now. Cause this is just like 7 days into the apocalypse. They're like, fuck the future. Like, just let's focus on this.
Yeah.
And that's all you could really do in that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like to think that maybe, you know, in that situation, should I survive? Yeah. I would be like, let's just, you know, okay, we can do a play or we can do a thing because, you know, arts and creativity doesn't go away. Mm. You know, people still want to have stories told and people still, you know, I would do a podcast in the future. It'd be three of us sitting around a campfire.
Tell you what, my next job interview, if someone says, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I'll be like, fuck the future. It's all about now.
I love that you're talking about like, oh, we're sitting around a fire as a podcaster. No, Kuni, we'll just be holding sticks in front of our faces while we're on a horse-drawn carriage going around going, well, let me tell you why you're wrong. Except instead of like the chat going or whatever, people like, you know, doing, sending comments on stuff, they'd just be able to heckle in real time. It'd be terrifying. Podcasting the future is terrifying.
I love that. We just put ourselves on a cart, travel along, and then people would just walk beside us for a few miles and just go, oh, that was a great show. Thanks, guys.
That's good.
Wander off, throw money at us occasionally.
Money.
We can have a little jar on our cart that's called coffee. Yeah,
yeah. Actual coffee. Please give me coffee. I will tell it. Yes, it's such a lovely thing too, because some of the ideas it presents out there is that everyone is kind of desperate for arts and entertainment in this post-apocalypse, but also everyone is fearful and kind of a bit wary of it in some ways. Like this traveling, traveling Shakespearean play thing, which is kind of so amazing and wonderful because it's not accurate. It's just making stuff up from whatever you can pick up. Like, I mean, some of the costume designing in this is just fucking on point. You might even see it, be able to see it on the screen right now. If you like, yeah, if you look down, Mackenzie Davis is wearing a sort of a half cloak on the top made out of old golfing gloves. You know, it's kind of wonderful how they put all this sort of stuff together to make, you know, plays that travel from point to point on horse-drawn old trucks, because that's how it all goes. And they always move around because they never want to stay too long, because if they stay too long, someone might get the idea that they can take something from them more than what they have to give. And they always stay ahead of that. It's really interesting. You know, it's always playing that off. They look like they're having a nice time, but there's always that element of danger that is pervasive throughout this whole thing. While you're following these nice stories about characters, always the show will remind you that this is actually a terrifying post-apocalypse.
Yeah. And there is a strong chance that anyone you meet may well be wanting to kill you or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I really, it's an interesting feeling when you're watching it, because it does have this constant feeling, this underlying sensation of dread. But at the same time, you can't help but kind of go, yeah, but things aren't terrible, you know. And it's such an interesting thing. And I love that we're now getting into the stage where there's TV shows that are so complex in their emotional makeup. You know, you look at something like this or something like Severance or something like even Tales from the Loop or something like that, where, you know, you find yourself watching it and feeling a great raft of different emotions, because it's not just going for a simple concept of, you know, two guys, a girl, and a pizza place. It's not it's not Big Bang Theory or anything like that.
Yeah. You mean we're moving away from sitcoms?
Yes. But also, I mean, it's not even as simplistic as something like The Walking Dead or, you know, genre shows that were kind of, here's your genre, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a really complex emotional concept that you're going to have to unpack for 10 to, you know, however many episodes. And we're going to explore really different thoughts and stuff all the way through it. And you're going to be constantly wrong-footed by it. And we're all like, yes, give me more.
Come on, Quinny.
Yes, I want to feel unsettled.
they're still doing Shakespeare. I mean, in Shakespeare named one of the characters in his plays Bottom. Like, who do you think that was for? That wasn't for the, you know, educated, like that wasn't one out there for the PhDs.
Bottom is a great character.
Yeah, I was going to say, fucking
best character in Midsommar.
Yeah, I mean, but like, these are the kinds of things. Like, I love that. I'm actually excited that both of you have, on a little bit of nudging, watched more than one or two of them. And are you going to finish it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, okay. I'm excited, like, actually, that you're going to finish it, because like, there has been a few shows that we've talked about where everyone's been like,
Oh, yeah.
You're going to go back and finish watching C season 2?
I knew you were going to say C. But that, I mean, there's a prime example of, you know, post-apocalyptic who gives a fuckness, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, where it's one note, it really isn't exploring anything particularly, you know, nuanced. And even though I liked Sweet Tooth, you know, still post-apocalyptic and kind of simplistic in a way.
I think,
whereas this, I feel like, yeah, there's a lot more going on.
This one grabbed me, I think, mainly because the violence that occurs in it is so jarring, because it's not setting you up for it.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's where I kind of got with it. Like, every time I was watching, like, this story is about something else, and then something incredibly violent and disturbing happens to these people, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not in a safe space in a happy story following characters that I like around. This is actually, it actually makes so much sense why they all seem on edge all the time. Like, why are these happy, you know, successful, kind of all these people having a nice time in the post-apocalypse? Why do they seem weird all the time? It's like, yeah, because they could die. And they know that.
Yeah.
No matter where they go. It's terrifying.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like it's interesting. There are characters that remind you of that all the way through as well. Like, there's visible kind of trauma. So that, like, there's a character who, I don't know the name of the character, because I'm not sure it's been said in the five episodes we've watched, who is missing both his arms and has some severe facial scarring and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I find him fascinating, because he's a walking reminder of how dangerous the world is. Now, whether or not that's how it happened, whether, you know, that his injuries were part of that or not, he is this constant sort of visible threat that shit's dangerous here. And I think the characters that are around do. So there's a thing in video game design, which is all about environmental storytelling. Walk into a room, find a dead body, and then find some other things around it that will tell you the story of what happened in this room. And I think this does a really good job of doing a whole bunch of environmental storytelling, even down to things like the costumes, you know, where it's like, okay, they've raided the golf shop, and they've found all of the different empty gloves that nobody's ever going to turn into anything useful, because what the fuck do you do with golf gloves? But somebody said, we can turn this into an amazing costume, and that's that. And it tells a story, and I think that's very smart.
Yeah.
Just keep coming back to how smart this is.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, I think one of the things I also liked about how smart it was, and I agree, I think the character you're talking about was Prince Ponsa, is his name.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, the costume designer.
Ah.
As pointed out, for the Traveling Symphony. But when you're talking about how smart it seems a few times I got really, had the wool pulled over my eyes with how I thought it was very dumb, or some ideas were a little too simplistic, until later on it kind of gets explained. Like, by the end of it, I got very involved in the prophet's story.
Oh,
and who is the prophet, and where did that character come from, and why is that character important? Gets finally kind of explained. And even though I will still sit down and go, yeah, the prophet, I don't like the prophet is evil, there's a certain understanding that comes by the end as well. And I don't know. Well, yeah. I mean, the things that become really important are not only the Traveling Symphony, but also the airport becomes massively important. And also this, I know that we missed, and you said, oh, you know, Jeevan Chowdhury, you know, Jeevan is there for a bit and then he goes away. Yeah, he does go away, but more stuff comes back and explains what's going on, what happened. He has a whole other arc, and you just spend this whole thing wondering about what would happen if what happens if people find out about what happened to everyone, or people who are important. And it's just really interesting and beautiful about how they tie those things up at the end. And it does look quite hopeful to the future. I just love that nothing is solved, but everything is kind of progressed by the end.
Okay.
So that makes it kind of one of those things where you're like, oh, okay. So, you know, everyone has had somewhat growth, but then it didn't solve the apocalypse.
Yeah. Look, I'm just happy to follow somebody's story for a little bit and then let them go on the rest of their journey. I don't need to be there for 10 seasons. I'm looking at you, Walking Dead.
Yeah. Four
spin-offs, three.
How long
things.
Can you keep flogging that same horse?
Well, that's the greatest
dead horse.
Yeah, the greatest thing about it, the horse won't die.
And how often? Like, yeah, and at a certain point in time, you start going, how long is the whole thing of zombies going to continue to be a way of telling stories about people? Because in the end, that's all we're watching this for. Stories about people. But how long does that impetus of zombies be the thing that keeps a show going? Fuck. Yeah.
Well,
and I think this is one of those ones that you could go for kind of almost for a long time because you can just keep shifting characters.
Yeah.
You know, meet new people, go off and explore what their experiences were.
I don't want that though. I mean, I loved what they did, but that's because I gave a shit about all of the characters because they all had a unique story to tell about how they dealt with the apocalypse, and that's amazing because I feel like I can see my own reactions through everyone's, like in this show, you watch it and you'd be like, yeah, I'd probably do that too. Or like, yeah, I'd probably make that bad decision as well. Like, you know, kind of.
You know, I know you well enough, Dion, to know that you would be the janitor who pretends to be the Homeland Security.
And then takes off with and goes and starts his own fucking cult.
Yeah, you would convince all of the ladies' soccer team that you are the one, and then boom,
set the off. Goalie.
Yep.
She was too butch.
I looked at that casting of that goalie and I just went, oh, you. I wonder what you were told when this casting came up.
I would hope that I'm not that guy. But we've already established this, though, Quinny. It's like if the apocalypse does happen, I'm probably going to die very quickly.
We have discussed this.
Yes, we have discussed this. I have some amount of preparedness in that kind of factor, which is just more like, oh, I don't like Quinny's like, oh, yeah, if the apocalypse happened, I don't need to do anything. I'll just wander over to Dion's house and take all of his stuff because he will have died in something stupid. Like, you know, like yeah. I've just got to collect water off the roof and then fell off the roof. Or a zombie got me up there where no one else has been.
I
just hope that in the future, though, Quinny, you would put me in the garden shed if I got bitten by a zombie.
Oh, buddy, you will always be. you will be the Ed to my Sean.
Yes.
Now I'm wondering, do you want to like how do we discuss the future of this thing? Because, I know that Misky is very, very keen to talk, and I think you've got some questions that you want to ask of the chat.
Kind of, like, very, very rapidly. I feel like all I'm trying to do in this, I don't really particularly want to rate it. I mean, I'm happy to give it a rating. I will do that. We can do a clip or just another trailer, a different kind of trailer, because the trailers are just whack on these things. Like, it's just not what you're expecting. You watch that trailer and you're like, I have no idea what's going on here. Should I watch it? And I'm like, yes. But you can't watch it all at the same time and you'll need to digest them is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, like, I mean, hearing Love, Sweet Love in the trailer really kind of threw me from what I've been watching. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that to me feels just like this is what we do in trailers now.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of imagery and we put it to a reimagined version of an older song, usually sung by somebody like who's probably the opposite gender from the original singer, and then finish it up with some explosions at the end. Good. Done. Thanks.
Yeah. As I said, though, like I'm just trying to encourage people to watch it. You know, okay. And maybe that might have to be the thing. You, Jill and Quinny, I can answer some questions on here. And you just take your headphones out for a little bit while I read the chat with, like, don't read the chat with the thing. And it's just like, ah, okay. And I'll do like a quick rapid fire round.
How's okay. That? Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
How do you want to do it? Do you want to do the ratings and then do that?
Rating and then spoilers. Like,
That's what we always do.
Rating, quick clip, come back, spoilers. You pull your headphones out for a couple of minutes. People in the chat can ask me whatever the fuck you want and I'm happy to talk about it. Or just tell me things or like exciting bits. I'll prattle on for a bit. We'll come back. Anyway, okay. I'm rating it 90. I thought it's really, really fucking good and I encourage people to watch it, especially if you're a theater kid. You're going to get a lot out of it.
Nice.
Okay. I am going to come in with a conservative 80 because I'm enjoying what I'm seeing so far. And until I watch the end, I won't be able to give it a full feeling.
Yep. Yep. I'm down with that. I think for me, I would say, I'm somewhere around the 80, 83 kind of mark, just because numbers. I think what I've seen so far, I like the way that it's telling its story. And I feel like wherever that story is going to go, it's going to be really interesting. I'm just, I have that awful feeling of like, oh, what if it shits the bed in the last few episodes? I mean, or worse, what if we get another Why the Last Man where it's like, okay, well, you don't get the rest of the story.
Absolutely.
See, there's another fucking post-apocalyptic thing of like, we've had a lot.
Focus too much on the violence.
Yeah.
Like this one doesn't actually focus so much on the violence.
No, that is very true. That is very true.
Yeah.
All and right, of course, there are some ratings in the chat. Thank you, Karina. And
70. God. All right. We'll go for this quick clip. I'll come back and then we'll wait until you have your earphones out.
Stay with me, sir. Stay with me.
Claire! Where's your mom or dad?
I don't know.
I can't leave you here. I'll walk you to the elf.
I think this thing is really happening. You can see it out there.
Can I have your attention, please? We have shelter. We have food. This is the best thing that could have possibly happened.
We're the Traveling Symphony. We travel for a reason. Just try to make the world make sense for a minute.
No one finds people from before. Jeeves!
Sometimes I think we should be out there looking for them.
I come to you with an invitation to the Museum of Civilization.
Beware the Prophet. Beware the children who follow him.
What happened to you in the first 100?
I was lucky. It had grown up and cared about me.
Welcome to the Museum of Civilization.
The before. It's coming back. I won't let it.
To abandon the future. All that matters is the now and what got us to this point. And we're in this together. And we're a family now.
Yes, we're all family now. All right, okay, hang on. Let me get the spoiler logo up first.
I am going to close the chat window.
Yes.
Yep. I don't see what anybody's asking.
Take your headphones out. It'll be a couple of minutes, so you'll be fine. Okay. So just imagine having a mukbang, but I'll wave at you. Like, I'll give you the jazz hands to come back.
Okay.
All right. I'll go and look at my phone.
Yeah, sure.
Me too. I'll go and try and find my book again.
Sure. All right, then.
Okay.
Okay, Chad, hit me. What's going on now? Okay, and if you're still in the chat, people mute. You can mute yourself. No, they can do that. They can do that themselves. They just pull their headphones out. It's fine. One thing I do want to say: the thing that I loved about it was the way that it wrapped up those two stories, especially because I was just so fucking excited to see Kirsten and Jeevan reunite at the end there. And I was like, that is just the best. Like, that's exactly what we've all been building for. And it has been so hard to go through those two stories. And it just got too emotional at the end. We just thought that they may not come back and they may not get together, but they did. And I really love that. All right, let's start reading. I'm going to read some of the stuff in there. Pretty Kangi is saying, okay, spoiler question. It's implied that Arthur cheats on Miranda because Blonde Lady quotes the graphic novel. Later, Arthur says that he didn't cheat on. Did he or didn't he cheat? I think he did, but not for the reasons that it kind of went. I just think Arthur as a character is a cad and played that very well. And it actually didn't matter if he cheated on his wife because it was already a terrible relationship. Okay, fine. I'm going to move on because this is only a two-way conversation through the speaky bit. All right, Missy. Okay, first question. There was a thing where the Prophet didn't announce themselves. They were only tagged by the children. Kind of. I think that the whole idea of Tyler the Prophet was that he became the Prophet that was the title was given to him by the children because he told them the stories that they wanted to hear because he just wanted to share the comic. But then that's just something he became. He became this thing because Tyler is such an interesting character. He, you know, by the time you find out all the backstory and what's going on with him, you realize that he's so independent and he's just sick of the old way of stuff, that the way that it was done. He just wanted something new. So he lost himself in that world. He could take that and share that with other people. And the people that were receptive of it were children, because he was just preaching a not return, a move on from the way that it was, from what your parents or the older people are teaching you. That's what we need to move on from. That's the way that I kind of got it. And it just got wrapped up in that narrative. And that's kind of where I may have got a little bit confusing earlier, where I was talking about how this whole thing is about metaphor. Everything is a metaphor in this. The Station 11, the graphic novel, is just his way of explaining why he doesn't want to return to the old way of doing things and start something new. Granted, he went a little bit off the rails there with, you know, the murder and the child enslavement, but hey, I'm not going to judge someone living in that situation. What else have we got there? Predakanga. Also, I didn't quite follow. Did Tyler order the kids to blow up Gil? Yes, absolutely. Which is terrible. I can't justify Tyler for anything in this. He did some terrible shit. And also he made child soldiers. He's a smart kid, but also a bit of a sociopath. I can see how that worked. There should have been no love story at the end there. And I love that Mackenzie stabbed him. She should have finished him off straight away. Yes, I can see that there was those sorts of things. All right. What is it? Unrelated from Peter Kanga. How the fuck did he set up a remote bomb in the museum tower? We don't talk about these kind of narrative things. They're just there to progress the rest of the plot. Yeah, but I still liked it. Yes, and Missy, I love that too, the scene with all the kids walking off, because the kids, again, is just kind of like the Firefly idea from Grave of the Fireflies. There's just thousands of Fireflies. There's lots of kids. Kids will keep going. They're the future now. They hold the future. And all the things that were holding everyone back was their connections to the past. And that's where I kind of come from. Wow. Okay. Yeah. And yep, there's a lot of stuff in there that is very difficult. But I'm gonna shake this, or we're just gonna keep talking. You're just gonna hear me for the rest of the time. Yeah, we're gonna be there. Who's coming back in? Who's on there? I'm doing jazz hands.
I got you, buddy.
Quinny's back. There Jill's on her phone. Someone text
I see
Jill.
You jazz hand.
Someone text Jill.
No, she's out.
And she's gone.
She don't
she's
care gone. No more.
Oh, yeah. We go back there.
I was like, wow, the sound coming out of my headphones got really loud all of a sudden. I'm like, shit, I'm trying not to listen.
No, it's okay. There were plenty of, there's some really good questions in there and still narrative threads that we didn't actually, you know, go through, but it's okay. It's just kind of, Okay. There's a few different things about the kid stuff. I can't explain a lot of the kid stuff. I didn't know as much. I just went with it. And there's some justifiable things. There's a lot of ropey plot holes that people kind of went, yeah, that's what made it not work that well. But I don't know. I just loved it because of, you know, Kirsten and Jeevan's story that runs throughout this whole thing. And also, you know, Tyler and everyone else. Like, I loved it. I thought it was really, really great.
I feel really bad, Dee. I feel like this is the thing that you have brought to us on a silver platter and said, please, my wets.
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
we have gone. Oh,
if
yeah.
Peter was here, it would have been fine.
She would have watched it all.
I'm used to disappointment. I've been trying and struggling, like trying for ages to get you guys to follow me down the rabbit hole of both Jean-Claude Van Damme and the Fast and the Furious movies. And you just resist me. That's all I'm saying. You guys are just resisting the beauty of it.
Well, now so, Jason Momoa's in Fast and the Furious. That technically means it's part of the DC universe.
Ew, don't say things like that.
He's in it, but, you know.
Yes. He's not fucking Aquaman in Fast and Furious.
No. But then again, I don't think he was Aquaman in Aquaman, so fuck it.
I can't justify it. I'm sure there's a lot more in the chat than I think people for like asking or talking about things that were irritating them. I would have kept going, but that would have just been a long story of me repeating things and trying to offer explanations, and I'm not qualified. Yes, okay. That's why we miss the industry. Whereas Peter, she would have given you a dissertation on most of this. I look forward to her eventually, maybe, hopefully, watching it. I actually really look forward to Jill and Quinny watching the rest of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I look forward to having that conversation with you down the track when we do get a chance to
watch
it.
Mainly because I want to know if you're satisfied with the ending.
Oh, okay.
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 Because, yeah, there is some... Yeah, there's a heap of stuff in there, and I can't defend all of it. I'm just saying I liked it.
Okay.
I'll
message you as soon as I finish.
No, there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, but what about this? And I'm like, I don't know.
I know it's not good. I don't care.
Oh no.
It's a magical mystery fantasy show and a metaphor. Everything's a metaphor.
You're like, a metaphor.
Like that show, Everything is Cake. Everything's a metaphor. Like, you know,
not deep enough, and everything's a metaphor. Huh?
Everything's a metaphor. It's all metaphor, Morty.
Oh, gee, what? I'm sorry, Rick. I thought that things were actually meant to be real things.
No, the airport's a metaphor.
Oh, gee, Rick.
The wheel's a metaphor.
Oh,
the prophet's a metaphor.
Oh, Rick, don't stop. I can't do it.
I actually am really sad. I don't know. I will say one thing, though. The astronaut who is focused in the comic book, I'm still not sure if they actually made the suit or if it's CG. But if they made that fucking suit, I want to wear that around a convention one day. That would just be fucking great. Because the suit is schmick. And also looks like a astronaut, and I was just like, "That is a cool fucking astronaut."
Nice, nice. Yeah. Okay,
cool.
Well, there are so many things that we are watching at the moment. You know, playing catch up on. But what are we talking about? Well, I mean, for a start, this Friday, just a little.
This Friday. I don't know.
Well, we're going to be doing Animates, but we're not anymore.
What are you guys doing this Friday? I don't know. I might just do nothing. I might sit at home and read a book.
Yeah, you could just be like an old hermit, huh?
We're not going to do Animates because we're going to watch Obi-Wan.
Yeah. Obi-Wan? What is this show? I know not of this Obi-Wan.
I just want to point out to you, I heard the Beatrooter today, Barnaby Joyce.
Oh, right.
Actually, it's like... actually say something about help me Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, but he fucked up the quote, and I've never hated him more.
Perfect. Also, Barnaby is nowhere near on the right side for getting help from Obi-Wan.
No, Barnaby.
Oh dear, I think Barnaby Joyce is the asshole water hoarder from the Book of Boba Fett show. He's not he's not Princess fucking Leia. That's the one.
Luke Skywalker. He's not even Jabba the Hutt, but you know.
Yeah, he's the water trader who's gouging people for cost of water on Book of Boba Fett.
Yep. And I hope everybody had a lovely weekend this weekend, this Saturday night. It was a good night for many of us. But yeah, so Friday night we're going to be talking, well, we're going to be watching Obi-Wan. And then week after that, we're going to be looking at the return of Animates, looking at some Samurai. But on Tuesday, what are we doing next Tuesday, Dion? What's our show?
The lesser of the two miniseries is we're going to be watching... I'm just setting up a whole divisive fight between me and Peter next time. Because she...
I hate to tell you this, but she's going to take you.
She's going to take me. We're doing Severance. So Apple TV's show Severance. So that's the last of the May schedule.
Yes.
And then June, we're doing Fuck Knows because we haven't written it yet. But
yeah.
I don't know. I think we should just do a review of the Thor trailer.
I'm a little Thor.
My review of the Thor trailer is, what?
My review of the Thor trailer is, still like the goat boat.
Yeah.
My review of the Thor trailer is, I got to try not to flick too hard.
I just think if he did flick like that, he should have at least just gone, as it went past. Thor should have just gone.
Yeah, as anyone who's ever been anywhere near Rusty knows, he goes like, you go, oh, fucking Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Good choices. Actually, there's some good suggestions in the chat. Thanks very much for that for June, which is Our Flag Means Death.
Yes.
Another one that I watched the first episode and went, yeah, and then got to the third episode. I was like, no, I'm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Love, Death, and Robots.
The return of Love, Death, and Robots, which is good fun. I'm actually going to be pushing real hard for the Chip and Dale movie.
I thought about it, actually.
I've had enough people say that they've watched it and really enjoyed it that I'm kind of like,
oh, no.
Okay, down to clown.
I mean, I want to watch the Chip and Dale one as a bookend to I can watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit versus Chip and Dale and see which one comes out. Although I will say that Everything Everywhere All at Once has a high mention. Maybe. Yes.
I'm very keen to talk about that.
I'm very keen to talk about some very disgusting parts of it, but yes. Yes.
Yes. Many of them the different kind of jazz hands.
Yeah. That's the jizz hands.
Too much flicking.
Yes.
Oh dear.
Yes. Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Cool. Well, so, yes. Thank you for some of the things in there. That's great. We will get onto that. And there's already good suggestions. June looks like it's already filled up. But yes, prep yourselves this weekend because in 2 days' time, on the 26th, which technically would be the 27th in Australia, Star Wars Celebration starts in. Yeah, Celebration 2022. It has been 2 years since they did any sort of celebration-y goodness. And hopefully this one's going to make my wallet cry with painful, painful extraction due to all of the plastic crack that will come issuing forth. Also, as I just found out, the Disney store is opening a local one in New Zealand and Australia.
Yes, so you'll be able to be able to get exclusives here.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens because Hasbro still hasn't done a local store. Anyway.
No, they just rely on direct market, you know, going out into Kmart and stuff.
I see. Yes, thanks, Pritikango. Star Trek still continues to be good.
Yeah.
Strange New Worlds.
Every episode of that I watch, I'm like, oh, this is refreshing.
I love that they're like revisiting a story from TOS. I'm like, yes.
And doing it in really interesting ways, but still kind of making it fun. And like, I'm digging Strange New Worlds in a big way. So, yeah.
We also got The Boys season 3 soon.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I got Jurassic World.
Miss Marvel comes out on TV soon.
Yes, yes. Casper says, is it as good as Lower Decks? I'd say it's well and truly on par. I think it's totally different, but
yeah,
it's great.
Lightyear comes out soon, Buzz Lightyear.
Lightyear.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that. There's a lot coming out.
All right. So like with June already full, July is looking also full as well. So something may have to go. Oh, damn shame. We won't be able to do everything everywhere all at once.
Why would you say that?
Just to annoy people. It's all right, yeah. It's fine.
He means literally, not the actual movie.
Oh, right.
Don't you get it? Come on, it's fine.
I'm a little slow. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little slow.
Well, we've had a lot on. But anyway, yes, look, okay, if you take away one thing from tonight and you're looking at this, go watch Station 11. It's really good. You know, it's different. It's unusual.
Noise.
It's noise. Very good.
Kanga, I'm not entirely sure when League of Super Pets comes out. So, July, says Kanga. Good.
Give us some time to watch some stuff. Over the last week, is anyone going out to see Top Gun Maverick? Anyone? Pew, pew. CIA.
Sorry, buddy.
Nope. You haven't been affected by the CIA? Okay, fine.
No.
Well, also the Mission Impossible is coming. The trailer came out today as well. And I was just watching that.
Another trailer. Like, I realized I haven't given a single fuck about any of the last three Mission Impossible films.
That's the beauty,
Quinny. They come out, I watch it. I like it. Like, whatever. But yeah, this is part one of a doubleheader.
Apparently.
Yeah. I'm like, does that mean that this is part one of the final one they'll ever make?
Fingers crossed.
Because why would you call it part one?
Yeah. That, as Casper said, they're solid movies, but eminently forgettable. I honestly cannot remember anything after two. Like the John Woo one, which was shot mostly here in Australia.
That. Shit movie. I fucking love that shit movie.
I know.
They're fighting with their motorbikes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it also had the best music. But then after that, you know, it's another action film.
It had Doug Ray Scott.
Have you ever fired two guns at the same time whilst jumping and screaming?
It had Doug Ray Scott in it, who did this movie instead of doing X-Men.
He did. Wolverine. He was meant to be Wolverine. And every time I see him in anything, I'm like, you're the guy that turned down Wolverine.
And look at where you are now.
Batwoman.
Oh, dear. All right. Thanks, everyone. Do we have anyone that we can go and
raid? Also, thanks, actually, so there is somebody that I think we can raid. BroXH. I don't actually remember who they are, but they are somebody that we follow. But they are playing DC Multiverses at the moment. So I think that's a very safe thing to send you all off to watch.
Right.
That stupid game with Shaggy and
that thing. Yes. I thought that was just a new Fortnite DLC.
Nah, a real whole game unto itself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so let's see what that's Sorry, a kids. Thing.
Sure. Yeah.
So you know what? Okay, BroXH is the chillest dude. Amazing. Then that's good.
Go and have fun, guys.
Good.
Yeah.
Everyone have an Obi wonderful Friday.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.